Thank you. Be seated. The court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioners in Maritime Overseas versus Waiters.
May it please the court, Mr. Robert L. Farwell will present the argument to the petitioners of the
Good morning. My name is Robert Farwell. A member of the Houston law firm of Easton Watson Dell and Corning, representing the petitioners in this case, Maritime Overseas Corporation of Transport Carriers. It's my privilege to address this court today on the issue of punitive damages under the general maritime law in maintenance and cure cases. I have taken the liberty of preparing what I'll call a flow chart and have provided each one of you with a copy of it in the event you have difficulty reading the actual chart. I'm going to refer to it later on in my argument. I hope that you will find it helpful in tracing the history and progression of punitive damages in this area of the law. And as I mentioned, I'll go to the chart with the leave of court in a few moments and go through the history. We're here today to discuss the availability of punitive damages in the aftermath of Miles versus Apex and this court's own decision in Penrod versus Williams under the general maritime law in a maintenance and cure case. As you know, Mr. Waiters received a $10,000 award punitive damages. It was the petitioner's position at every stage of the trial, as well as the appeal, that he was precluded by the decision in Miles from receiving such an award of damages. We believe that this case provides this court with an opportunity to conclude the journey which it commenced in Penrod versus Williams towards uniformity in seamen's injury and death litigation.
Counsel, isn't this issue ultimately going to be decided by the High Nine of the Potomac?
Well, Your Honor, it very well may be. I would suggest to you, though, that the rationale of the Supreme Court, the unanimous Supreme Court in Miles versus Apex, at least from petitioner's standpoint, has already resolved the issue, and it remains to be seen whether they're ever going to accept cert on this particular issue. There is, as you know, in the Guevara case, a petition for certiorari pending. And as you also know, the chances of it being accepted in that case or any other case are extremely slim.
Shouldn't we hold the decision in this case, though, until we get the Supreme Court's order?
Well, Your Honor, petitioners do not think that it's necessary to do that because you have already extended the rationale of Miles versus Apex and Penrod versus Williams to the general maritime law to preclude punitive damages in the unseaworthiness setting. And there's absolutely no logical reason to treat maintenance and cure and unseaworthiness different. They're both judicially created causes of action. They both exist only under the general maritime law. They're both a species of liability without fault. They both involve contractual concepts. They both preexisted the enactment of the Jones Act or the Death on the High Seas Act. They can only be asserted by a seaman. You have already taken the step, which we're asking you to take in this case, by extending the Miles rationale to the general maritime law on seaworthiness cause of action. And I would suggest to you that it makes no sense to treat them differently, because if you do, given this court's decision in Penrod versus Williams and the recent decision of the Fifth Circuit in Guevara, as well, of course, as the Supreme Court's decision in Miles, you find yourself where you can be presented with this sort of situation. Punitive damages are unavailable under the Jones Act for gross negligence. As per this court's decision in Penrod, they're unavailable under the general maritime law for unseaworthiness, even if a condition of unseaworthiness is created by willful and wanton conduct. I would suggest that it makes no sense, that it makes no logic, that it flies in the face of Miles' uniformity mandate for punitive damages to be available for late payment of a medical bill arising out of that same injury, or for late payment of $8 a day in maintenance arising out of that same injury. It makes no sense. They should not be treated differently. They both have the same historical background. Miles versus Apex stands for the proposition, petitioners believe, that you cannot create more expansive remedies under the general maritime law that Congress has seen fit to create in legislation directed specifically at a given class of cases. And in the Seaman's case, we're talking about the Jones Act. That is the foremost piece of maritime tort legislation. I'm a bit reluctant as a lawyer to take an absolute position on an issue, but I'm going to do it in this case and suggest to you that there is not a single case in the general maritime law today which supports the result achieved by the Court of Appeals in this case. There's certainly not a single case that they relied on in their decision which supports the result. And I would suggest to you that they relied on five Fifth Circuit cases. First of all, they relied on the original opinion in Guevara, even though it had been vacated at the time by the Fifth Circuit on their own motion to grant a rehearing en banc. And the result which they achieved during the en banc rehearing, of course, was directly contrary to the proposition for which they relied on the original Guevara opinion. The Court of Appeals also relied on the Breeze case, the Overton case, Tullis, Hopper versus Zapata, and Maritime Overseas Corporation versus Ellis. And if you look at those cases, every single one of them relies on either Holmes or Mary Shipton to support the award or affirmance of punitive damages under the general maritime law. Holmes and Mary Shipton have both been expressly overruled by the Fifth Circuit in Guevara. They were the two style punitive damage cases that were relied on around the nation. And if you look at the history of the law in this area, you'll see that there's virtually no case which does not rely on them in some fashion subsequent to the time that they were handed down. And if I may, I would like to approach the chart at this juncture. I hope this is helpful to you. It was helpful to me in picturing how the law has developed. And you'll see the source of the controversy, so to speak, was the Vaughan decision by the United States Supreme Court in 1962, and I would submit to you that it is the only Supreme Court case that has ever addressed the issue of the remedy for wrongful withholding of maintenance and cure. And as you can see, they determined that attorney's fees were an appropriate damage award for damages suffered, necessary expenses as a result of a shipowner's callous, recalcitrant, willful, and persistent conduct failing to pay maintenance and cure. They did not award punitive damages.
They didn't mention punitive.
Not in the majority opinion, no sir. It is mentioned by Justice Stewart in the dissent for the proposition that the majority was incorrect in awarding them as compensatory damages and that they should have been awarded as exemplary damages. That makes clear the fact that they were awarded as compensatory damages. Vaughan has been miscited, misapplied, misrelied upon, however you want to phrase it, for over three decades now. And as you can see, Pocahontas was the first case to address punitive damages in the maintenance and cure setting. First case to award punitive damages in the maintenance and cure setting. The first case in the history of maritime law. We're talking centuries since before the time when Richard Lionheart had brought the rules of Oleron back from the Crusades. 1973 was the first time that ever happened. And when it happened in reliance on the Vaughan dissent. I would suggest to you that Pocahontas is not an authority for the result achieved by the Court of Appeals in this case.
A lot of mark here. I think the time was not a matter of fact.
Next we have Mary Shipping. Mary Shipping was an unseaworthiness case, and it was the first case in which the Fifth Circuit had an opportunity to rule on punitive damages in the unseaworthiness setting. And in that case, they relied on two assumptions, neither one of which is viable in the aftermath of Miles versus Apex. They assumed that non-pecuniary losses were available under the general maritime law, and they also assumed that the unavailability of punitive damages under the Jones Act did not compel their unavailability under the general maritime law. As you know from reading Miles versus Apex, both of those assumptions were expressly rejected, and Mary Shipping has now been expressly overruled in Guevara. It no longer provides a basis for an award of punitive damages of the result achieved by the Court of Appeals. Next, we come to the Holmes case, and as you can see simply by looking at the flow chart, it relies on three cases, Vaughan, Pocahontas, and Mary Shipping. Of course, we've already pointed out that Vaughan never discussed the issue of punitive damages. It doesn't stand for that proposition. Pocahontas, as recognized in Guevara, was never rock-solid support because it relied on the Vaughan dissent, and also, as you can see, it was rendered 17 years before Miles versus Apex. In addition to relying on Vaughan and Pocahontas, Holmes relied on Mary Shipping, expressly overruled by the Fifth Circuit in Guevara. Holmes expressly overruled by the Fifth Circuit in Guevara. Today, in the jurisprudence of the Fifth Circuit, punitive damages are unavailable under any theory in a Siemens injury death case. They have been abolished, and that is consistent with Miles in all respects. I've got these other cases here at Crowley just to give some historical background as to how the law was developing. You'll see that in 1978, the Second Circuit awarded punitive damages in a maintenance and cure case, but they limited them to attorney's fees. And I believe that you will see, if you look at the cases, all we're talking about is semantics here. Because they limited to attorney's fees in compliance with law, I think that they pay at least some lip service to some of the minority views on the dissent involved. But in any event, they're consistent with what was done by Guevara to the extent that they limited it to compensatory damages, something that can be objectively determined, attorney's fees. And if you'll look down, you'll see that the Second Circuit in the Wallstrom case has already extended the Miles rationale to loss of consortium cases. We see this law continuing to develop. I believe that you'll agree with me if you look at the cases. It's only a matter of time until they come back and clarify. In accordance with Miles, Crowley doesn't stand for the proposition. Gaspard, I put in here simply to show that the Fifth Circuit until 1981 was following the wrong decision. Reasonable attorney's fees for callous and recalcitrant shipowner conduct. It was only after Mary Shipping, and as you can see, although it's deceptive here, Gaspard was decided before Mary Shipping. I've got that on here just to show that for many, many years the Fifth Circuit did follow the law. We come down to Hines.
Counsel, as a general rule, can you not recover attorney's fees for maintenance and cure?
No, Your Honor. Vaughn stands for the proposition that you can recover them. Guevara stands for the proposition that you can recover them, but in instances of egregious conduct on the part of the shipowner. In other words, the callous and recalcitrant conduct, the descriptive words they used in Vaughn.
I guess what I'm thinking of, in other words, under Texas law, you can't recover attorney's fees unless you have a rule or a statute permitting the recovery.
That's right.
Is that equivalent to General Maritime?
In Vaughn, Your Honor, the Supreme Court created what I believe to be a special exception for seamen, a bad faith exception to the American rule that litigants must bear their own litigation expenses. That's discussed at length in the Guevara opinion, and there have been seven subsequent Supreme Court decisions which have discussed Vaughn in a non-seamen setting for that same proposition that it is a bad faith exception to the American rule, which punishes litigation conduct, not underlying merits. Therefore, it's not punitive in the tort sense. It's more in the nature of a penalty. There's no question it punishes, but it punishes not on the merits based on litigation conduct instead. It's not punitive.
Clotwater, as I understand, I mean, you just said so, but in your briefs, you argue that Vaughn, in essence, sets up some sort of good faith conduct or a bad faith conduct on the part of the employer who fails to pay maintenance and cure, the threshold being that it has to be intentional conduct. It can't be. Texas has a negligent sort of, I mean, standard for bad faith in the insurance context. You seem to analogize Vaughn as being the Supreme Court's effort at putting some sort of good faith or bad faith gloss on this duty of maintenance and cure. But the Supreme Court says we're going to permit you to recover attorney's fees. In Texas, attorney's fees historically have been included as part of, you could use that as your evidence of punitive damages. So it's not contrary to American rule. You don't get it just because you win, but if you can establish intentional conduct, then you can get that as punitive. Why would permitting punitive damages in this context not actually under Texas law with regard to how we deal with where you can get attorney fees for bad conduct of one of the players be entirely consistent with Vaughn, be entirely consistent with Guevara, which says you don't get punies, but you do get attorney fees for bad conduct? Why wouldn't we be entirely consistent saying that punitive is where you get your attorney's fees in Texas law?
Well, I guess I've been unartful in explaining my position on Vaughn. Vaughn, I believe, does stand for the proposition that in bad faith cases you can recover your attorney's fees. And I believe that essentially what the Supreme Court in Vaughn was saying, that conduct which might otherwise give rise to punitive damages in the maritime context, the general maritime law in the Siemens case, is going to give rise only to an award of attorney's fees. And you've got to remember the long history of maritime law that we're dealing with here, because our law comes from the English system. That's where all the maritime law comes from, the general maritime law, or at least that's the foundation for it. They never had punitive damages. It didn't come over as whole cloth, this part of the law. They still don't have it. They award attorney's fees, but punitive damages, no, it's something you don't see. And I'm not sure that I've answered your question, but what I'm saying is that the only remedy which a seaman has for wrongful withholding is an award of attorney's fees, and he must prove egregious conduct on the part of the shipowner. And when he does that, he is, in fact, entitled to an award of attorney's fees. Short of that, no, there's no remedy.
And in Texas, if we don't permit the recovery of attorney's fees, but under the guise of punitive damages, then in Texas, there'd be no recovery.
No, I think that the federal substantive law is going to control in this area, because we're talking about a general maritime law remedy for maintenance and cure. Texas has no law for maintenance and cure, so to speak, that's not derived from the general maritime law of the United States. No, I don't think at all that simply because the case is filed in Texas state court, because it is a substantive as opposed to a procedural remedy.
But you've asked for rendition in this court, haven't you?
Well, I have, Your Honor.
But what you're actually saying is that if they want to get additional damages for this intentional conduct, what they should have had was testimony about attorneys. I mean, I'm not sure what the award should have been.
There's no question. The Fifth Circuit in Morales versus Garajack set forth the standard which they should have followed. If a shipowner refuses to pay maintenance and cure and has a reasonable reason for doing so, then when you file the case, if you make a recovery, all you can get is the maintenance and cure that you're owed. If they're unreasonable, then arguably you're entitled to compensatory damages. If you go beyond that to egregious conduct, willful and wanton, arbitrary and capricious under the law as it was submitted in this case, they could have argued for attorney's fees in addition to the punitive damages. They put on no evidence of attorney's fees. That was their choice.
In addition to compensatory. So you can get compensatory for negligent conduct.
That's exactly right.
If you have egregious conduct, you get attorney's fees as a part of your compensatory damages.
That's correct. That is correct. And I'm gonna skip over now for just a moment.
You're going to have to skip more than that, because we're going to like
to.
Are there any questions?
Thank you, counsel. Court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Harold Eisenman will do my argument.
Thank you. May it please the court. As this court has stated in Penrod versus Williams, it is not obligated to follow the Fifth Circuit. And we submit, particularly when they are clearly wrong in their assessment of the current law, in their pronouncement of the current law. The Fifth Circuit and the Ninth Circuit, which has the same finding, is in conflict with the First, the Second, the Third, the Fourth, the Sixth, the Eleventh Circuits and the Alaska Supreme Court in his Wiesen case. The 1st, 4th, 6th, 11th in Alaska allow full punitive damages in maritime law. The 2nd and 3rd allow punitive damages but limited to attorney's fees. I would also point out to the court that some of these circuits have not reacted to change their findings after Miles. In Flores, Wiesen, and Manuel, three of these cases in these different courts are post-Miles. Post-Miles jurisprudence indicates a continuing
event. Which circuits are post-Miles?
I'm sorry, sir?
Which circuits are post-Miles?
The 11th, the 4th, and the Alaska Supreme Court in this Wiesen case, sir. Post-Miles jurisprudence indicates a continuing availability of punitives and maintenance and cure in the circuits which I have announced or have advised the court. Punitive damages are widely available to maritime workers other than seamen, and it's clear in the general maritime law that they are entitled to these types of damages. As you may know, the Supreme Court has pronounced seamen as wards of the court and entitled to special treatment because of the particular hazards of their profession, and we don't think it's likely that the courts, as they continue to interpret general maritime law, will treat seamen any worse than other incidental maritime workers who don't undergo the same hazards and the same hardships being away from home and these sorts of things that the seamen have to undergo. Since Miles, 11 district courts have rejected the argument that Miles affects punitive damages in those maintenance and cure cases. Several cases in Louisiana, Illinois, Washington. We submit that the courts will not interpret Miles' denial of non-pecuniary damages for loss of society as applying to punitive damages. We think it is a leap that the courts likely are not going to make. There is a long history in our jurisprudence stretching back into the 19th century, going back to cases in the 1850s and 60s of courts punishing ship owners for abusing seamen, contrary to what has been earlier represented. The courts have long considered it appropriate and a suitable way to protect these workers who are subject to the hazards and hardships that, as I say, most other workers in our society don't have to face. Vaughn has since served as the principal authority to award punitive damages against employers who culpably withhold maintenance and cure. And it's clear, I think, from the language of Vaughn that even though it wasn't a punitive damages case except for attorney's fees, that attorney's fees in Vaughn were awarded as punitive damages because they talk about capricious and callous disregard and use that type of language. We believe Guevara misinterprets Vaughn, and it cites cases that Vaughn supports the availability of attorney's fees to penalize bad faith abuses in the litigation process. But none of these cases suggest that is all that Vaughn stands for. It was actually the abuse of the seamen themselves and not the abuse of the litigation process that led Justice Douglas to hold that such abuse was, to quote him, a dreadful weapon in the hands of an unconscionable employer.
Well, how do you deal with the petitioner's argument that if Vaughn wanted to talk about punitive damages, they certainly could have because that was one of the issues that Cent raised?
Yes, sir. I don't think that, in my opinion, that the punitive damages other than as attorney's fees were clearly presented to the court in that case. The case was presented as more as an attorney's fee kind of case, as I understand it.
But historically, one punitive damages where you got attorney's fees, I mean, wouldn't they have been faced with the historical concept that punitive damages is where you get attorney's fees?
True. It's hard to say, you know, how tactically or strategically that case proceeded to me. I don't know. Like in our particular case, we elected to proceed for punitive damages and not attorney's fees. It was purely a tactical decision. We felt like that was where the strength was rather than, you know, tie up the jury and worrying about what the lawyers are going to get. And it may be there are reasons, policy reasons, why the Vaughn attorneys presented it more as an attorney's fee case other than a punitive damages case. We believe that Vaughn's scope and intention was to protect those workers by providing an adequate club, and they considered the award of attorney's fees as a club in the event the employers didn't provide the medical care and the subsistence when they were struck down by illness or injury while serving their ship. To restrict this remedy to only attorney's fees after litigation is filed, as Guevara attempts to do, will have a deleterious effect on both the injured worker and our court systems. It will force seamen to file suits as soon as possible to enforce their maintenance and cure rights because there will be no incentive for an unconscionable employer to pay, knowing that they cannot be stuck for attorney's fees or anything until the lawsuit is filed. Then they can cave in as soon as the lawsuits are filed and never pay any kind of penalty for any egregious conduct. But I think the worst effect will be to deny medical care to these men and women who may desperately need it. We believe that defendant's conduct in this case does provide a look into the future that Vaughn and his predecessors, going back over 100 years, and his progeny are emasculated. To this day, they haven't paid Mr. Wader's medical bills, even though the award is not challenged in this appeal. It is no accident that this issue, presently being considered in both the state and the federal court system, involves this very same defendant. This very same defendant has been in the 14th Court in the Ellis case, in which the court pronounced that there are punitive damages for willful and wanton failure to pay maintenance and cure, although in that case the award was overturned. The largest maintenance and cure punitive damage award ever upheld was against this particular defendant in the Porsche case, and it was only $100,000. And looking at the history of this issue, if you look at all the cases, There are not a lot of cases where punitive damages are awarded, and the awards are modest and frequent and substantially less than $100,000. In light of that, we believe that it is clear that punitive damages in maritime cases are not an unfair burden on a ship owner. They create no hardship on the industry because of their modest nature, but the threat makes it much more likely that these employers, like Maritime Overseas, will do what they should and hopefully will keep these cases out of early litigation. We urge the court to follow Vaughn, and the majority of the courts have considered this issue, including both the first courts and the 14th courts of appeals in Houston, and affirm the decision below. Thank you.
What is the response to, it doesn't make any more sense to allow it in maintenance and cure than in unseaworthiness cases?
Well, sir, let me back up a little bit. The Jones Act does not mention punitive damages in any way whatsoever. If the Jones Act did mention punitive damages, if they disallowed punitive damages, I don't know that it would make any difference, and I don't believe it would with regard to maintenance and cure, because the Jones Act allows a recovery for injuries from negligence. Unseaworthiness allows a recovery from those very same injuries for unseaworthiness. So really, there's sort of Siamese twins. It sort of is a way to go two ways of getting a bite of the same apple. Maintenance and cure is a distant cousin. There's no connection between negligence, unseaworthiness over here, and maintenance and cure over the other side, except that you have to be a seaman to be entitled to both of them. One of them is fighting out the liability. The other one should be an automatic, that if a man gets hurt in your service, that the decent thing to do is to provide him a subsistence allowance and to pay his medical bills while he's off.
Thank you.
Gotcha.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Court is ready to hear rebuttal. One more thing, counsel. Are you aware of any cases moving up in the district courts? Into the circuits on this issue post-mile.
No, sir, I am not. The only thing that I am aware of is that Professor Robertson at the University of Texas has filed a request for certiorari in the Supreme Court. He's handling that case. I have that brief available to me. It wasn't timely filed with
this court. It's called Inguevara.
Inguevara, I'm sorry, yes.
But you're not aware of the activity in other circuits, were you?
No, I'm not.
Your Honor, there was a mention made of the fact that there are post-Miles decisions out of the 11th and 4th circuits and out of the Alaska Supreme Court. That's just wrong with regard to the 11th Circuit and the Alaska Supreme Court. The 4th Circuit case that is post-Miles is manual. It did not even refer to Miles, and it relied on Holmes and Pocahontas, and it's pretty Duvar. Its foundation is gone. There is no court of appeals decision post-Miles that supports the proposition that the respondent makes in this case. And as you can see, we have all the circuits with post-Miles decisions that are extending the Miles rationale. The loss of consortium, unseaworthiness, maintenance and cure in the case of the Fifth Circuit and the Ninth Circuit, as well as the non-Jones Act general maritime law cases. As the Fifth Circuit discussed in Guevara, there are two types of maintenance and cure causes of action, and they hearkened back to the decision of Justice Cardozo in the Cortez case in 1932 for the proposition that there is a tort-like maintenance and cure claim and a contract-like maintenance and cure claim. The tort-like claim occurs when the failure to pay results in some aggravation or some new injury to the seaman. That's what we're dealing with in this case, a tort-like claim, because the Court of Appeals specifically found that Mr. Wader's condition had been aggravated. Guevara goes on to point out, as did Justice Cardozo in the Cortez case, that when it is a tort-like claim, the Jones Act controls. The Jones Act overlaps. And because it overlaps, its pecuniary limits apply. Unquestionably, in this case, the Jones Act is the piece of federal maritime tort legislation which controls the remedies available in accordance with the Miles Uniformity Mandate.
That requires proof of negligence.
The Jones Act is the negligence cause of action.
So there is no fault other than maintenance and cure, right to wages and medical bills, criminal medical bills.
Well, there is a unseaworthiness is, of course, also a species of liability without fault. And that was my earlier reference. They're both general maritime law remedies that only seamen have.
Let me try to rephrase my question. I guess Mr. Waiters would have to prove some fault or under the Jones Act or unseaworthiness to be entitled to payment of his medical bills, whereas he would not under maintenance and cure, would he?
That's exactly right. Maintenance and cure, you can analogize it to a comp statute. It has nothing to do with underlying liability facts. He's entitled to that if he gets off the ship injured or ill. And what I'm saying is if he does that, and for any reason there's a wrongful withholding, and it causes his condition to get worse, that gives rise to a tort-like maintenance and cure claim, which is controlled by the Jones Act.
But it's not an equivalent remedy. I mean, you have to prove fault in one case, and under maintenance and cure, you don't have to prove any fault.
That's right, but he does have to prove the aggravation. That's where the $1,000 in compensatory damages came from in the Court of Appeals below.
He'd have to prove fault and aggravation, wouldn't he?
No, he doesn't have to prove fault. All he's got to prove is aggravation. Because it's liability without fault, Your Honor. I don't know how.
Under the Jones Act?
Under the Jones Act, of course. But what I'm saying is the wrongful withholding of maintenance and cure, if it causes an injury, gives rise to a tort claim under the Jones Act.
But you would also have to prove fault in the occasion of the injury itself, would you?
That's not? Correct.
Okay.
That's
so
correct.
My only point is maintenance and cure and Jones Act are not equivalent remedies.
No, they're not. And what Justice Cardozo said in the Cortez case is we must determine that today the extent to which the modern statute has modified the ancient rule. But if it causes an injury, then the Jones Act and its pecuniary limits have to control. Your Honor, we ask that you follow your own ruling in Penrock. We ask that you follow the Supreme Court's decision in Miles. And I think that there's a single quote from Miles which sums up the jurisprudence in this area as well as anything. We sell in occupied waters. Maritime tort law is now dominated by federal statute, and we are not free to expand remedies at will simply because it might work for the benefit of seamen and those dependent upon them. This reference to wards of the court, that may have been true 100 years ago. It is not true today. That's recognized in Miles. They have told seamen that they have to look somewhere else other than the courts. These are some of the best paid working men in the nation if they work. These are people with powerful unions. This is not the day and time when they were cast in irons below the deck on a sailing ship or something. These people make well above the national average income if they work. So to call them wards of the court is simply misleading. The references to MOC and the fact that their name has shown up in this area of the law, I would suggest to you is because they have had the courage to try these cases. Punitive damages is one of the things that fosters settlements in cases that should otherwise be tried. The MOC did not let that stand in their way of doing what they thought was right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Any other questions? Thank you, Joe. That concludes today's arguments, and all of these arguments are submitted on brief and oral argument. Marshall will please adjourn the court.
Your Honor,